Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 10, Verse number 34 and 35. O Sonaka Rishi, Kuru Jangala Panchalan, Sura Senam Sayamunam, Brahmavartam Kurukshetram, Matsyan Saraswatan Ata, Maru Danvan Atikramya, Sovir Biraya Paran, Anartan Bhargava Pagach, Chantavahomanag Vibhu. O Sonaka. The Lord then proceeded toward Kurujangala, Panchala, Surasenya, the land on the bank of the river Yamuna, Brahmavarta, Kurukshetra, Matsya, Saraswata, the province of the desert and the land of scanty water. After crossing these provinces, he gradually reached the Sovira and Avira provinces. Then, west of these, reached Dwarka at last. Purport by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The provinces passed over by the Lord in those days were differently named, but the direction given is sufficient to indicate that he traveled through Delhi, Punjab, Rajasthan, Madhya Pradesh, Saurashtra, and Gujarat, and at last reached his home province at Dwarka. We do not gain any profit simply by researching the analogous provinces of those days up to now, but it appears that the desert of Rajasthan and the provinces of scanty water like Madhya Pradesh were present even 5,000 years ago. The theory of soil experts that the desert developed in recent years is not supported by the statements of Bhagavatam. We may leave the matter for expert geologists to research because the changing universe has different phases of geological development. We are satisfied that the Lord has now reached his own province, Dwarka Dhamma, from the Kuru provinces. Kurukshetra continues to exist since the Vedic age, and it is sheer foolishness when interpreters ignore or deny the existence of Kurukshetra. Jai. See, I want to go back to yesterday's purport because there were several things that I wanted to cover, and that was, first of all, yesterday, I still don't have that purport, but yesterday I was talking about how Krishna enjoys taking a subordinate position to his devotees. Is that right? Yeah. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, verse number 31, it says, here is a specific example. Here is another explanation of the bewilderment created by the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is the Supreme in all circumstances, as already explained. Here is a specific example of the Lord's being the Supreme and at the same time a plaything in the presence of his pure devotees. So, okay, what is the verse here? It says, my dear Krishna, Yasoda took up a rope to bind you when you committed an offense. And your perturbed eyes overflooded with tears, which washed the mascara from your eyes. And you are afraid, though fear personified is afraid of you. This sight is bewildering to me. Okay, so talking about Damodarastakam. The Lord's pure devotee renders service unto the Lord out of unalloyed love only. And while discharging such devotional service, the pure devotees forget the position of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord also accepts the loving service of his devotees more relishably than the service rendered spontaneously out of pure affection. Without anything of reverential admiration. generally, the Lord is worshipped. So, in other words, there's a difference between the worship of the Lord in Vaikuntha and the worship of the Lord in Goloka. Generally, the Lord is worshipped by the devotees in a reverential attitude, but the Lord is meticulously pleased when a devotee, out of pure affection and love, considers him to be less important than himself. The Lord's pastimes in the original abode of Goloka Vrindavana are exchanged in that spirit. The friends of Krishna consider him one of them, and they do not consider him to be of reverential importance. The parents of the Lord, who are all pure devotees, consider him a child only. The Lord accepts the chastisements of the parents more cheerfully than the prayers of the Vedic hymns. Similarly, he accepts the reproaches of his fiancées more palatably than the Vedic hymns. When Lord Krishna was present in this material world to manifest his eternal pastimes of the transcendental realm of Goloka Vrindavana as an attraction for the people in general, he displayed a unique picture of subordination before his foster mother. That means Mother Yasoda. The Lord, in his naturally childish playful activities, used to spoil the stock butter of Mother Yasoda by breaking the pots and distributing contents to his friends and playmates, including the celebrated monkeys of Vrindavana, who took advantage of the Lord's munificence. Munificence means his kindness and generosity. Mother Yasoda saw this, and out of her pure love, she wanted to make a show of punishment for her transcendental child. She took a rope and threatened the Lord that she would tie him up, as is generally done in the ordinary household. Seeing the rope in the hands of Mother Yasoda, the Lord bowed down his head and began to weep, just like a child, and tears rolled down his cheeks, washing off the black ointment smeared about his beautiful eyes. The picture of the Lord is adored by Kunti Devi because she is conscious of the Lord's supreme position. He is feared often by fear personified, yet he is afraid of his mother, who wanted to punish him just in an ordinary manner. Kunti was conscious of the exalted position of Krishna, whereas Yasoda was not. Therefore, Yasoda's position was more exalted than Kunti's. Mother Yasoda got the Lord as her child, and the Lord made her forget altogether that her child was the Lord himself. If Mother Yasoda had been conscious of the exalted position of the Lord, she would certainly have hesitated to punish the Lord, but she was made to forget this situation, because the Lord wanted to make a complete gesture of childishness before the affectionate Yasoda. This exchange of love between mother and son was performed in a natural way, and Kunti remembering the scene was bewildered, and she could do nothing but praise the transcendental filial love. Indirectly, Mother Yasoda is praised for her unique position of love, for she could control even the all-powerful Lord as her beloved child. Yeah, so I wanted to read that yesterday, but I wasn't able to find it. So then there's something else also. A nectar devotion. And it says, controlled by love, Krishna becomes obliged to the loving spirit of the devotees, and not exactly to the service rendered. No one can serve Krishna completely. He is so complete and self-sufficient that he has no need of any service from the devotee. It is the devotee's attitude of love and affection for Krishna that makes him obliged. A very nice example of this obligatory behavior was manifested when Sudama Vipra went to Krishna's palace. Sudama Vipra had been a class friend of Krishna's, and due to his poverty, he was induced by his wife to see Krishna to request some aid. When Sudama Vipra reached Krishna's palace, Krishna received him very well, and both he and his wife washed the feet of Sudama Vipra, showing respect to the Brahmana. Remembering his loving affairs with Sudama in their childhood, Krishna began to shed tears while receiving him. Another instance of Krishna's obligation to his devotee is described in the 10th canto, 9th chapter, verse number 18 of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Sukadeva Goswami tells King Parikshit, "My dear king, when Mother Yasoda was perspiring, tired of trying to bind Krishna up with rope, Krishna agreed to allow her to bind him. Krishna as a child was disturbing his mother by his naughty activities, and she wanted to bind him up. Mother Yasoda brought some rope from the house and tried to tie the child, but she could not tie a knot due to the shortness of the rope. She tied together many ropes, but when she finished, still the rope was too short. After a while, she felt very tired and began to perspire. At that time, Krishna agreed to be bound by his mother." In other words, no one can bind Krishna by any means other than love. He is bound only by obligation to his devotees because of their ecstatic love for him. Haribol. So I missed those two things yesterday. Okay, so today we're talking about geology and geography. So the basic point here is, who do we believe? So do we believe modern scientists and anthropologists and geologists and so-called experts? Or do we believe Sukadeva Goswami, who speaks the Srimad Bhagavatam, or Krishna, who speaks the Bhagavatam, which is all about Krishna, or Krishna, who speaks about himself in Bhagavad Gita? So this is a fundamental decision we have to make in our life. Who do we believe? Because knowledge begins not by study, but by who you believe is telling the truth. If, like as a child, if your mother corrects you, you believe your mother because you're accepting her as authority, or your father. When you go to school, you have a teacher, and she talks about science. And so, as a child, you don't know. So you think she's an authority, or he is an authority, because they have the title of teacher. But are they actually an authority? That's the question. When they're forced to follow a curriculum established by speculators and basically, most of them are demons. So we should never accept anything from... we should never accept a person who is not a devotee as a teacher or an expert, because most of the time they just speculate. And they manipulate so-called evidence to prove what they're saying is true. It's called selective choice of evidence. They select only that evidence that seems to support their thesis, and they reject any other evidence that may counter their thesis. So, therefore, you can't really trust such people. They have a vested interest. Just like you can't trust all translations of the Bhagavad Gita. Just because the Bhagavad Gita was translated by someone doesn't mean anything, because you have to analyze the qualifications of the person who translated. Are they a pure devotee? Are they a mixed devotee? Are they a non-devotee? So non-devotee and mixed devotee will make many, many mistakes in translating Bhagavad Gita. And because of that, before Prabhupada came to the United States and translated Bhagavad Gita and had it printed, there were hundreds, almost 600 translations of Bhagavad Gita since the 16th century. Right? Not one person became a devotee by reading all of those different Bhagavad Gitas. Not one person. Yeah, some people had a little appreciation, like Emerson and Thoreau, and they're poets and philosophers. They had some appreciation for it. Even Gandhi appreciated Bhagavad Gita, even though he was a atheist. People say, what? No, Gandhi is a sadhu. Doesn't mean anything. Gandhi actually said, I don't really believe that Krishna existed. Right. So that is sad. But see, unless a person is a pure devotee, they cannot really understand the Vedic literature and explain it properly. And not only being a pure devotee, one also has to be in a bona fide disciplic succession. And there are only four bona fide successions: a Brahma, Gaudiya, Vaishnava, Sampradaya, and then the Sri Sampradaya, the Kumara Sampradaya, and the Rudra Sampradaya. And all four of these exist today. All the other so-called Sampradayas are bogus. Okay, so how do we know that? Because every day we recite the first verse of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, right? And in that verse, it clearly says that Krishna is the Supreme Absolute Truth, and that everyone in the material world is bewildered by the illusory representations of water, seen on fire, land, seen on water. And because of that bewilderment, even if they study the Vedas, their conclusions are usually wrong. So unless one is instructed by a person who's in proper sampradaya and who is seriously following the rules and regulations of Krishna consciousness, there's a very good chance, just about 100%, that whatever that person says is going to be wrong. And this is hard to accept. You say, what do you mean? I mean, you have these experts in Sanskrit. They read Sanskrit, and they write these long books about this book of the Vedas and that book of the Vedas. It doesn't mean anything. If the conclusion is wrong, no matter how good the scholarship is, it's useless. So what is the conclusion? Well, the conclusion is what Arjuna said. Arjuna is a witness of Krishna. He's a personal friend of his, and he's a devotee of his. So what is Arjuna's mature realization about Krishna? Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavam, Purusham Sastratam Divyam, Adidevam Ajam Vibhu, Ahustvam Rishayar Sarvir, Naradas, Vyasa Naradas Tata, Devala Asito. What is that? This is 10th chapter, verses 12 and 13. Devasi Naradas Tata Asito, Devalo Vyasa Swayam Eva Bravissime. Arjuna said, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate abode, the purest, the absolute truth. You are the eternal, transcendental, original person, the unborn, the greatest. All the great sages such as Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyasa confirmed this truth about you, and now you yourself are declaring it to me. Swavam itad vitam manye yanman vadasi keshava nahite bhagavan vyaktim Vidura Deva Nadanava. O Krishna, I totally accept as truth all that you have told me. Neither the demigods nor the demons, O Lord, can understand your personality. Swayam ivatmanatmanam svita tvam purushottama bhuta bhavena bhute su deva deva jagatpati. Indeed, you alone know yourself by your own internal potency. O Supreme Person, origin of all, Lord of all beings, God of gods, Lord of the universe. This is Arjuna's mature realization of who Krishna is. And therefore, this is what you would call the best criterion to judge if somebody else's Bhagavad Gita is bona fide or not. And this is also corroborated by Vyasadeva and Sukadeva Goswami. So what does he say? Oh, my Lord, Sri Krishna, son of Vasudeva, oh, all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisance unto you. Right? So any other conclusion than that, and that conclusion is followed with a life of dedication to serving Krishna. Any other conclusion that, oh, God is an impersonal, we can also become God by doing meditation, and that there's no such thing as Vaikuntha and Goloka, those are all fictitious speculations of the Vaishnavas. There's only the Brahman effulgence, and we merge into that energy and become one with God, and we become God. It's all a bunch of nonsense. None of that is true. The only thing that's true is that there is a spiritual sky. But as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he says that in the 8th chapter, that parastasmattu bhavo nyo vyakto vyaktat sanatanam yasa sarve subhute su nasatsu na vinasyati. Yet there is another unmanifest nature which is eternal and is transcendental to this manifested and unmanifested matter. It is supreme and is never annihilated. When all in this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. So now the question comes, who are you going to believe? The atheists say, well, when you die, there's nothing. Right? There's nothing. And the soul is just, if there is a soul, it's a combination of matter. And then when you die, all that matter just goes back into the universe. There's the law of conservation of energy. So nothing is lost. And maybe one day all those atoms that you made up your body will come back together again. This is Deepak Chopra's theory. You know, this is all nonsense. There's no validity at all to any of these speculations. But yet people believe it because they have PhD after their name, or because they can get up there and fake themselves through a lecture and use big words that nobody understands. And people say, oh, I didn't understand one word. It must be the truth. You know. So who are we going to believe? You see, that it all comes down to that. Knowledge is not what you study. It's who you accept as an authority. So Arjuna accepted Krishna as authority. Vyasadeva accepted Krishna as authority. Narada Muni accepted Krishna as authority. And all the great acharyas in the four sampradayas have accepted Krishna as the supreme authority. So, who are we going to believe? The Vaishnava sampradaya, or are we going to believe the Asuric sampradaya? Asuric means the demons. So, I rest my case. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. You have to decide who you want to believe. That's the main decision you have to make in life. Knowledge begins by acceptance of authority. That's the way knowledge begins. Hari Bol. Any questions? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.